Welcome to the Smuggler's Den.
You will never find a more wretched hive of scum and villainy. We must be cautious.
Brought to you by Game Empire Pasadena, a great friendly atmosphere for playing a wide variety of games and for purchasing all of your gaming needs. Check them out online at GameEmpirePasadena.com. Welcome to the 22nd episode of the Smuggler's Den. I'm your host, Tiny Grimes.
And I'm Ben Tully. Be sure to check us out at our various online presences, including on Facebook at The Smuggler's Den. And you can always reach us at our email at smugglersdenpodcast@gmail.com. And sometimes, but even now less so than usual, Tiny streams occasionally Star Wars games at twitch.tv/tinygrimes.
Yeah, I always feel bad about that. Last night, I was streaming, and someone got on there, and he said, "Wait, this isn't Star Wars?" And I said, "Yeah, I know. My apologies." But we did talk some Star Wars. So if you see me streaming and you really have a question for me that you want to ask me, I will answer literally every question asked me on my Twitch account. So I will answer you live on the air. We probably won't talk about it for an hour because the other people on the stream will be like, "What are they talking about?" But the cool thing is it does bring exposure to Star Wars LCG to people who hadn't thought about it before.
Yeah, you've claimed to say that there have been converts in your Soulforge stream.
Yes.
People who have gone out and picked up the game.
Yeah, and it's much more so awareness. Like, there's a ton of people now that are like, "That game sounds really cool," and I don't know if they've actually played it. And if they have no one to play with, they might have looked into playing it and decided they couldn't. But at least a number of people are intrigued.
It's exciting. Anytime you can get new players to get into the game when it's still young, it'll be nice.
I agree.
We just want to take a minute and again start the episode with an apology. So this is now two episodes in a row.
We apologize for nothing.
And yeah, last time we had an episode, so episode 21, we were all like, "Don't worry, everybody, we're back on the horse. We're going to be doing it every 2 weeks." And then immediately, what do? We drop the ball and did not get it out in 2 weeks. And so now this will be a 3 week between episode shenanigan. Tiny and I just want to apologize. Life is a little crazy. Tiny started teaching again recently, which is eating up a lot of his time. He's also addicted to a number of other card games that are not Star Wars, as well as Star Wars, which is interesting. It's very hard to do a podcast with only one person. Tiny can do it really well because his ego is very large and he's very, very capable of and happy to hear his own voice a lot of the times. But I tend not to be able to carry the episode entirely by myself, though I did try. Tiny just doesn't know about it.
Whoa. That's interesting. Let's release that one. That's awesome.
It's just me cursing into the microphone for 40 minutes straight.
I bet that would be our most popular episode yet. We finally see the real Ben.
So we do want to say sorry. We're trying our best. Worlds is now less than a month away, which I'm very excited for. We're going to try it. What did you say?
My heart's beating faster.
I know. Every morning I find myself in the shower thinking about... Star Wars.
This is a safe for work episode.
I know, safe for work. I'm not thinking about Slave Leia. I'm just thinking about...
Yeah.
Anyway, so the apology is done now. We're sorry. We're going to work on it. There'll at least be one more episode, if not two, before Worlds. And then imagine that everything will kind of go back to normal after Worlds when things have calmed down and I'm totally not in a different city after I moved or something like that.
Don't make us all cry, Ben. Don't make us all cry.
So sad.
All right, Ben. You know what I've noticed is a pretty important part of this game? You might not have noticed this.
No, Tiny. Can you tell me what the most important thing of this game is?
Not necessarily the most, but a really important part is edge battles. I've noticed they are a fundamental aspect of the game. Have you noticed that? Have you picked up on that?
I mean, I have. I've never actually won an edge battle ever.
Wow.
Yeah, like, you know, I just figured, whatever. Like, I don't get them at all.
Ben is teasing there, by the way. He is good at edge battles.
Sure.
So with Worlds pretty rapidly approaching now, we thought maybe this would be a good opportunity to really talk about edge battles and give our insights into edge battles. And I'm kind of hoping that with our insights, this will also cause other people to respond to the thread in which we post this with their insights, and then we can all improve at Edge Battles together.
Yeah, I mean, it's such an important part of the game. It controls so many things beyond the obvious of who gets to strike first and which icons are active. But it also controls the flow of the game in terms of the pace and, you know, what cards are played and seen and the information that's given that way, and controlling somebody's hand and the resources that make up the person's hand as opposed to the actual resources on the board. So, you know, we're not saying this is a exhaustive list of Edge Battle information, but this is this type of, these are the types of things that we think about and have seen and really believe make the Star Wars Edge Battle really important, and, you know, what makes the game a lot, you know, there's a lot of unique stuff about the game. This really does make it unique.
Yep. And in our pre-production meeting, that was like a minute, we came up with just this short list. So like Ben said, not exhaustive, but some useful stuff. So Ben, I think for me, one of the most critical aspects of Edge Battles that people often overlook is just simply emptying a bad hand.
Sure.
I've seen this a lot of times where someone draws a hand, they play like one guy to the board, say it's the dark side, it's a pretty terrible guy, like maybe a duty officer or one stormtrooper, they commit it to the force, they pass, their opponent attacks in a way in which it doesn't matter if they win or lose the edge battle. They're still going to take X amount of black blast damage. Their guy's committed. Maybe it's a resource guy like a duty officer. They don't want to double commit him, and they think to themselves, I don't want to block this because I don't want that guy double committed. I'm taking the damage anyway, and they say, no blockers. Ben, why is that a bad idea?
Well, if you have a bad hand, this particular example, this edge battle, is the perfect way to get rid of it because you can just be dumping cards, right? You can put all five of those remaining cards, if you've only played one, all of them in the edge battle, and just get a new hand the next turn. I've been doing this a lot recently. I think it's been one of those things where I used to always kind of keep back one or two cards, but now, like, even cards that I want to see, like, if I can't play that card right away, unless it's like crucial for the deck, it's gone pretty much in every edge battle, right? I have a couple decks that I have that use the Death Squadron Star Destroyers. And I love them. I think they're a great card. And I really want to play them. But if I can't play them and I know I can't play them my next turn, it's gone. It's like I don't even think about it.
Yeah, I think for me this is especially true with the Sith deck, in which, at least the Sith deck that I've been using, you are digging, right? You're digging for Executor. You're digging for Palpatine. You're digging for Vader. And if you don't have one of those, even if you have a good card in your hand that's not one of those guys, like, say you have a force choke and you have nothing to force choke, it's worth it to just chuck them all and dig deeper.
Yeah.
Place where I really struggle with this, and I've noticed this about myself, is with the Jedi deck, where you have to get Han, Chewie, Falcon, or Luke, right? You have to get one of those or you lose, and I'll have, like, a trust your feelings and a lightsaber deflection and, like, another really good card, maybe Let the Wookiee Win or something. And these are amazing cards, and I find myself holding them for two turns, and then on the third turn, just wanting to kill myself as I think, what are you doing? Yes, those are great cards, but you still have nothing, and you're about to lose the game. And so that's, I think, where it becomes really hard to consciously make this decision that, yes, these cards are amazing, but right now, it's not what I need. I need good dudes. This game is really about getting those big dudes to the table if you're going to play big dude decks.
Sure. Yeah, and it's a really – and we've – I think we should have prefaced this. Like, this is Edge Battle discussion October 2013 as opposed to Edge Battle discussion that we've had 1,000 times over. And I feel like this – especially this bad hand emptying – scenario, we've talked about it a lot, and so it might sound like a broken record, but it is so important to get in your head. It can make you such a better player if you know what cards, you know, you can get rid of at what time, and not hold ones just because they're good cards for the sake of holding good cards.
Right, and this is one of the reasons why this is a little bit of a segue, but the sooner you can isolate a Worlds deck before Worlds, you need to just find a deck and sit on it and play that deck over and over and over so you know exactly this. You know what card is just too critical to the deck to discard. And you know what card looks critical to the deck, but really isn't that critical to the deck. Like a Trust Your Feelings is amazing, but in a vacuum, it's not amazing. And like another card would be Vader's Lightsaber. Does your deck really need Vader to have targeted strike? Or is Vader more in there as a direct damage engine? And you need to know this for yourself before you get to Worlds and are sitting at a table at Worlds with Vader Saber and saying, I don't know what I should do with this.
Right. Yep. And this is, and we, just a reminder, this is all from a scenario where it doesn't even matter the edge battle, right? We're not even talking about strategy here. You're just dumping your hand. You don't care if you win. You don't care if you lose. Like it, you just need to get the cards out of your hand. Moving on topics, trying like at least give you discrete indications of when we're changing topics.
It was a really smooth segue there.
Thank you. I just want to. This is the problem, right? We have a list, and they're not exactly the most amazing card lists here. It's just talk about this stuff. So, as a slight segue, also a hard stop. One of the things is it's very similar, and Tiny can maybe elaborate on this because I have no experience whatsoever. In the way that a chess player is thinking about the moves that are happening in the future, you should be spending a lot of time thinking about what your next turn is going to look like, especially after your opponent's done deploying their cards, right? So you're going into their conflict phase and you have a plan. Like there's a plan taking shape in your head. My next turn is going to consist of X. And X, in some cases, might be, especially, you know, it might be to attack. You know, the light side obviously has to attack to win. The dark side might have a broader strategy involving attacking to win. And so one of the things you might want to consider is blocking just to make sure your opponent uses some cards. Right? So if they have, especially if they have multiple cards in their hands, you know, and you're planning on deploying things that you get, and you don't necessarily have the hand that's going to make you, like, you just defend. Like, even if you defend and get away, make them discard one card into the edge battle, you've already made your next turn that much easier.
Yeah, and that's a really good observation that it's really about planning ahead. I mean, it goes to when you deploy even your stuff, you need to be thinking, like, okay, maybe this turn I can't attack very well, but if I can get them to dump their whole hand, then I will be free to go through. And like you said, block with things that you might not want to. Like you have some dude committed to the force, and your opponent is thinking, like, he's not going to block this. This is going to be unopposed. He gains nothing by blocking with this guy. The damage is still probably going through anyway.
I can kill this unit that maybe looks crucial on the board.
Yeah, so then you just block. You get them to, I mean, I don't know if this is just me or if other people have this. For some reason, I'm usually able to lure people into putting cards in edge battles that don't matter. So I'll even block sometimes an edge battle that clearly doesn't matter. And they should just be like, pass, you win the edge, I don't care, nice try. Instead, right. Like, I'll think kind of hard, put a card in and be like, and act all jittery, and then they're like, wow, he really needs to win this. I'll put in, you know, three cards, all three of my cards. Yeah, and then they flip them over, and they smile real big. I got eight icons, and you're like, I got one. And they're like, oh, okay, but I won it. Yeah, and you're like, yep, you did. And then next turn, if they have no cards in their hand, you know, they're just a sitting duck.
Yeah, my favorite, I have to honestly say, my favorite periods of the game is when my opponent is all focused out and has used up all their resources and has no cards in hand.
Oh, yeah. Christmas morning.
Yeah, I'm always like, well, so I get to do whatever I want, right? And it's like, yes. And it's like, so if I have the cards in my hand that win the game, I win the game, right? They're like, yeah. I'm like, okay, well, I have those cards.
Yeah. And this is especially the case of, like you said, it should start when you're deploying your guys. But then certainly after your opponent plays, you can really see what that board's going to look like when they start attacking. Are they going to focus out? Are they leaving just the one guy back with a white tactics icon, right? If that's the case, get those cards out of their hand because that's going to be a real thorn in your side, that one annoying weenie who has the white tactics.
Sure. I mean, and I think, you know, it just didn't come up in our first topic of edge battles, but one of the cards that obviously makes or breaks edge battles for a lot of people is Twist of Fate. And so there's a tendency, I think, to use Twist of Fate in big edge battle scenarios. But this is another great scenario where Twist of Fate is really powerful, where if you've, you know, if the situation calls for your opponent to win the win the edge battle, but you don't really care, you know, they're going to put in a big number. And if you can twist that card away to make them put in a second card or a third card now because their numbers are lower and they've gone from their big card to their small cards and they still need to win, but you don't really care. It's a great place. It's totally fine to twist for an edge battle and then not win or not play any more cards or not win that edge battle on purpose. Like, that's a totally viable mechanism for, you know, playing your opponent in a way that is outside of the realm of the actual cards that are on the board.
Yep. If you want to knock out their hand, there's no better way than with a twist. I totally agree with this, and I think this is going to sound weird. I think most of my Twist of Fate plays are not to win edge battles, but to whittle my opponent's hand. I won't say all of them, but sure. A lot of them, more than I would think.
I think there's a lot of... I think those two things are pretty much the same thing, right? Because if you're whittling the hand and you're trying to win the edge battle with the Twist of Fate, that's helping you.
Yep.
But if you're whittling the hand for something that you're planning in the future, that's also helping you too.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
One other thing I've noticed is that force icon totals have become increasingly larger. And this is something that if you don't recognize becomes a big problem. Like, you can no longer play against a rebel deck who's attacking you and you're defending and you put three in the edge battle with two cards and you think, boom, I got them. They put two in, I put two in. We both put in a two and a one. Rebel decks don't have that problem anymore. Every deck that I play, at least, can have a pretty large drop with just one or two cards.
Yeah. I mean, and really the essential card that has made this much easier for both sides of the force, but particularly Rebels, is Battle of Hoth.
I call it for card of the week.
For the 19th time in a row.
Every week.
And so we've talked about Battle of Hoth a lot. And in this edge battle discussion, in terms of force icons, Battle of Hoth is one of the ultimate trump cards. Because as an attacker, it allows you to play one card into the edge battle. And then when they put their one card in, it allows you then to pass and have a pretty good chance of winning. I mean, yeah. It's one of those things because your opponent, and this happens every time, my opponent will always go, well, that's got to be a twist, right? You've only put one card in and you've twisted. So I only put my one icon in because I wanted to see where this was going. I thought you might have a twist. And you go, okay, yeah, sure, it's a twist. And then you flip it up and it's your three to their one. And it works on defense as well as on offense. Like, having that three on defense, like having a Battle of Hoth on defense is one of the most amazing plays because of that twist fake out. You play one, you pass, right? There's very few cards that beat a three by itself if it's one to one.
Yeah, I agree. It's making that – it used to be like – If your opponent played a card, or like you're the first player, you play a card, they play a card, and you pass, it was pretty much a giveaway that was a twist. And so you'd have to really vary that. Like, okay, I have to put two in here just to fake them, and then even then they'd be like, well, I still think it's a twist. And you're like, darn it! Like, those are all my little cards. Now all I have are my big cards, and if he twists me back, I'm going to lose. And that has just become so much more complicated. Because before, if you went one card, they put in a one even or a two and then you passed, trying to fake them out and they passed, you just lost. And now because of Battle of Hoth, it's just so cool all the tricks you can do.
Yeah. I mean, trying to think what other cards I've been seeing a lot as high number edge cards. I feel like people have been experimenting a lot with Rebels. So you see Akbar a lot more commonly. That's a three edge icon.
Mm-hmm.
I really personally, like I've already mentioned before, the Death Squadron Star Destroyers, they have two, right? So if I have two copies of Deploy to Fleet in my deck, and so I have a total of four of the Death Squadron Star Destroyers, I put those guys into the edge battle like I don't even care. I mean, like if I have one in my hand, I know there's three more in my deck. If I'm really hoping to see one, I'll see one eventually. It's not that big of a deal.
Yeah, what I've noticed more and more is that, and I feel like this is especially the case for Rebel decks, it's not necessarily that all the cards in the deck have more icons, but it's the cards that you're not going to be playing have more icons. So, for example, something like Preparation for Battle, you're going to be playing probably the Tauntaun, probably the Speeders. Maybe you can't play both Speeders on a turn. The Speeders are two. You're probably not playing Shelter for the Storm, so that's two. Like, it just feels like the little chumps that you play to the board are low icons, but that's fine because you're playing them. And then the cards you're holding back tend to have big icons, like Battle of Hoth. And so you have, like, three cards in hand, and it's two twos and a three, which it just felt like before when Rebels did that, it would be two ones and a two. And
sure.
It's just such a different mindset, especially if you're playing that Sith deck that just wants to sit back and win that way. You have to keep more cards in your hand. You can't deploy as many cards to the board now because then you're just not going to have enough to beat that deck, especially if they have, like, Hoth Operations out, because now, even with one Speeder out, it's one more number.
Yeah, I mean, you know, this is why we're having this discussion. It is really important to understand that at least the dynamics, the basic dynamics have really changed through the release of Edge of Darkness and the first cycle. What used to be very common practice for all of these kind of Edge battles has really changed since the core set.
Yeah, I agree. I like to see that. I like to see the game evolving. It's kind of scary in a way. Like, Edge icon tolls are becoming so much bigger. Like, as long as it doesn't keep going, and then suddenly it's like, yeah, now you have to have 8, and then 10, and all these crazy cards come out. But I like where it's at now. I feel like it adds, like, it was just didn't feel right for Rebels to be like, okay, so here's the deal. I'm going to play guys, I'm going to lose every single Edge battle, and then I'm either going to win or I'm going to lose. That's one of the reasons why I didn't like Rebels.
Right. Yeah, no, it was one of the it added to the list of why Rebels used to be inconsistent.
Yep, exactly. All right, Ben, this might sound like a crazy thing to say, but I think if you really want to master Edge battles and really, really master them, the key is to know the Force icons of nearly every card in nearly every pod. And I know this sounds difficult, but this is also part of just playing the game a lot. And the nice thing is you don't have to know every pod. There's a whole bunch of pods you're not going to see, but you need to know at least all the regular pods, like Speeder deck. You need to know all of them in the Speeder deck. You need to know all of them in the Sith deck. You need to know all of them in the Han Chewie Falcon deck. And while that sounds overwhelming, it's not quite as hard because, like I said, you basically start with the good decks and work your way down. Are you going to see the Godel pod? You might. Probably not in a top-level deck, so that would be something I would say is farther down the list to memorize. And then there's certain pods that just no one plays, and those pods are probably not as important. Like, for instance, Lobot's pod. I probably could not tell you the Force icons in Lobot's pod.
You probably couldn't even tell me the cards in Lobot's pod.
Yeah, but well, for me it's interesting. I have an easier time telling you the icon on a card than I do the card in a pod, because for a lot of cards, you just know, like, okay, it's a cruddy unit. Well, that's probably going to have one. You know, it's a spell or an event. It's probably going to have two if it's a decent event. If it's completely overpowered, it might only have one, like Force Lightning. But it's easy to get a general idea of cards and then have to adjust based on individual ones.
Yeah, I mean, so let's put this into practice, shall we, Tiny?
Whoa, are you saying you're going to test me?
I just did maybe a couple cards. I have the list. This is going to be exclusively from the dark side.
Hmm.
Okay.
All right, I'm ready.
All right. This is not a pod quiz, everybody. This is just how many Force icons does this card have? So let's try this one. Colonel Stark.
I think he has two.
That's incorrect. He has three.
Yeah.
Wow. Jeez. No, that...
That's a bad
Here we
start.
Are. Yeah, that was a really bad start, considering I gave you like five really random cards before, and you got them all right.
Yeah,
it's
funny.
Like, he's going to totally know this one.
In our pre-production, I was like, I think I would do okay with this, and he names like seven random cards, and they nail them all, and then Stark's really easy, and I'm like, two. Yeah, so Stark has three.
I'm going to stick with his pod.
Oh man, see, this is a problem. I don't know about it anymore.
But you should place that pod. Yep. The Morsh Marine.
That has one, and that's why that card's bad.
It's got two, and that's why that card is okay.
It has two?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Okay. I could have sworn it has one. Now I have to look it up. But go ahead, continue.
Because you don't believe me?
No, I don't. I'm sure it only has one.
All right. So I'm going to have to explain which card this is because you might not recognize the title, right?
Sure.
Communications Officer. And this is the one from Imperial Vader's pod.
Oh. That guy only has one.
Guy only has one. What about Fear?
Fear also has one. Nope. Two.
Two. Yep, it has two.
Yeah, Morsh Marine, I just looked it up. It has two.
Thank you for confirming. See, here's the thing. I've really found a bunch of objective sets that I know you never, ever, ever think about.
Yeah, this is good because this is what you need to do. You need to isolate the ones you do know, the ones you don't know, and work on the ones you don't know. Just sort of pour over those objectives, look at them carefully, and remember them. Like,
so
it's an easy one. Stark costs a lot. He has to be three. Otherwise, he's pretty much pointless.
Well, I mean, Veers costs a lot, and he's only one.
But Veers does so much to the board.
That's true.
And also, I remember he's one, because when I opened Veers, I was like, what? One? What, are they nuts?
Yeah, sure. All right, so I got a couple here. How about the Rancor?
I don't know, but I'm going to say he's two.
He's one.
He's only
He's only one. What about the event, A Disturbance in the Force?
I'm almost positive that's two.
That's a three.
Would you stop naming ones that I never, ever used, making me look like a complete fool, Ben?
No, this is too much fun. I can't believe how much fun this is. All right, this is the last one. This is the last one just as a demonstration.
Oh, man.
Coruscant Defense Fleet.
I think that one is two.
It is a two. Congratulations.
Hey. Hooray for me.
End on an up note.
Woohoo!
All right, hold on. Let me. I have purposely been picking pods and objective sets that Tiny never plays. So let me pick an objective set that Tiny plays consistently, and we'll show you what it's like. Okay, so I'm picking from the Endor Gambit. I'm going to just list the cards. You tell me how many icons they have.
Sure, okay. Let's see how foolish you can make me look now.
No, you're going to know this one. AT-ST Commander.
One.
Yep. AT-ST.
Two.
Yep. Aft Armor Plating.
One.
Yep, and then the last card is a Target of Opportunity.
And that's two.
Yep, see? There you go.
Yeah, that was actually really good for me, because I had an illusion that I knew more of them than I did. And you picked pods that I don't play generally, but not pods that are out of the realm of someone else playing.
Sure.
That's a really good lesson.
I really think those will be the types of pods you see in the first two rounds.
Right.
Where the ones that are going to be of worlds, those are going to be the ones that you see. Where you sit down against somebody, they're either local and they've just been playing for fun with some friends, and they're like, I really love the Rancor. And they have the Rancor in their deck. And you're just like, oh, crud, like, I don't even, like, that increases the number of three, you know, icon cards and with the Disturbance of Force in that pod from, you know, whatever they're playing from two to three or two to four. And you're like, oh, wow, that really changes these edge battles because I had to remember that they're there.
So this is just something I came up with just now that I am now going to do. I'm going to sort the cards in the amount of icons they have, and I'm going to memorize every card in the game that has three or more. Because to be honest, I thought I already had, and apparently I have not. So that's a really good strategy to know, because you need to know what's the highest number they have in their deck, how many do they have at that number, and how likely are they to put it in. And if you don't remember, Stark has three in, say, like a Desolation of Hoth type of deck where they can't afford to put him out usually, you are going to get boned on that one, because you're going to go, well, the highest they have is two. They don't have a three even in this deck other than Battle of Hoth. I've seen all of them already. I'm totally clear. And then they drop Stark and you go, oh, that's right. Stark has three. I just lost. And maybe that swings the game enough where I lost the game. So thank you, Ben, for making me look foolish and reminding me that I need to do that.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. Anytime. I think Tanya has a good point. It's not necessarily the case that you need to memorize every card. If you can, that's great. But it's one of those things where, just like knowing which objective sets have Twist of Fate, right? That's awesome. If you know that, you're going to be doing much better than somebody who doesn't. If you want to take it a next step further, you know, then you know all of the pods that have, you know, Target of Opportunity or Heat of Battle. So this is the same case. If you can know every card that has edge icons of 3, you're going to be doing pretty well. If you can then move it down to the 2 and to the 1, then you're going to be golden in terms of game knowledge and how that will affect your gameplay.
Yep. Knowledge in this game is really important, more so than any game I've played before. Knowledge is always important, but just even more so in this game. And as much as you can pack into your head, the better. Like on the airplane, just be sticking your head full of knowledge. I have a question for you, Ben. Can you name the dark side cards with 3 or more edge icons? There are tons of them. I just did a sort. I'm still scrolling going, oh yeah, oh yeah, that one. Wow, that one too. There are lots of them.
I don't know, I probably couldn't do all of them.
No, you wouldn't be able to do all of them, but and now that I'm seeing this, we can't even do that game. There's just too many. All right, just too many. So try to memorize them if you can. Like, for instance, Vader's TIE Advanced has 3.
I knew that.
I didn't remember specifically that it was a card with 3. Like, if you had asked me Vader's TIE Advanced, I would have said either 2 or 3. Because it's only 2 cost. So it's only 3 cost. I generally think usually the icons are 1 below the cost for units. So that's a little bit surprising to me to see that it has 3.
Hmm.
Okay.
I mean, well, I think that there's some degree that comes with it in terms of it's supposed to fit inside the Star Wars canon, right? Like, Vader's TIE Fighter has 3 because it's Vader's TIE Fighter. It's very strong with the Force. It should have a lot of Force icons.
Right, like the repair droid having 1.
And R2-D2 having 0.
Right, so that seems to fit well. But no, I agree. Overall, I totally agree with that, that they try to do that, and then sometimes you're just like, wait, what? What's happening?
Yeah. Sure. I agree.
All right.
Moving forward into the next segment.
Oh, wow.
Segway.
We really need to go to broadcasting school because that's kind of bad.
Yeah, well. We do it for free. It's not like anybody pays us for this.
Well, come on. You can be honest. Ben is actually applying for a job with ESPN to be a broadcaster, and I don't think he's going to get it.
Da-na-na, da-na-na.
Never mind. You just changed me. So, Ben, I discovered this fate card that's really good that is absolutely critical for edge battles. Can you guess what it is?
Protection.
That one is good, but that is not what I had in mind.
Really? Because I really like protection.
Yeah, I do too. But it's actually Twist of Fate.
Oh, I've never seen that card played.
I think that's an exaggeration, but it is very good. Moving on.
Moving on. End of segment.
So the first question, I guess, would be, do you intentionally build decks with Twist of Fate, or are you one of the people that says, Twist of Fate's really good? Yes, I will grant you that. But you don't need a Twist of Fate. You can be just fine without it.
I am the first. Okay, let me clarify this. When it comes to extremely competitive events, I can't think of any extremely competitive events coming up, but if I was planning for an extremely competitive event, I would want to maximize the number of Twist of Fates in the deck that made sense. Like, I wouldn't be putting things in there for the sake of the Twist of Fate if it didn't flow with the deck, but I would try and get as many in there as I could because I think Twist of Fate really can make and break games.
Yes, I totally, completely agree. And it's made it really hard because the typical speeder deck doesn't have them.
Sure.
And so you're left with, what do you do? Do you shoehorn in Leia? Do you shoehorn in Hit and Run? Do you try to do something crazy just to get them in? And I've been really torn on that. I love the speeder deck, but I'm just not that comfortable not having any twists. And it's sure. not for my sake. I feel like it's my opponent just being able to sit there and be like, well, they don't have twists. Cool. This is the easiest edge battle ever. I know I have won. Boom. Like, I can put Palpatine down and know I win, and it's no longer that risk of like, oh my god, am I going to put Palpatine in only to have it be twisted away and then just be furious? No, I'm not. I'm going to put him in and win the edge battle.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about this. The speeders rely very heavily on having Hoth operations, and nowadays having a hero's resolve turned on to make up for that lack of twist. So if you, for some way, or in some capacity, are able to turn those objectives off and they don't have twist of fate, then as the dark side, you pretty much won the game.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'm going to go that far. Because one of the
Wouldn't
reasons
you,
why
though?
The speeder deck
Wouldn't
is
you?
So good
Wouldn't
is because
you?
Of the black damage.
But, sure, but if it's a black damage, if it's black damage, and those and they can't win edge battles, and you're on the dark side, and you're playing something like Palpatine, and you can always tactics out their guys that have black damage.
Yep.
You've won the game. Like, and you don't need to have that many tactics icons to, you know, essentially stop the biggest damage dealers from doing their damage. And then that's all that you're left with. You know, and it depends on the type of deck, right? Like, it means that you never, the light side will never be able to tactic somebody using the speeder tank, right? Because it's not, they don't have the ability to do it. You know, it means that if they're playing speeders and they have some Y-wings in the deck, you can always go after Rogue 3, who has 2 black damage, and not after the Y-wing that will only get the 1 after you win the edge against it. Like, I mean, it makes a big difference.
Yeah.
And not having the twist really can change the way the dark side plays their cards.
Yep. And that's why I think twists are critical. It's not so much for you to win the edge battle. It's the psychological element of the opponent knowing that they just have an easier time managing edge battles now.
Sure. I mean, I think, and I don't want to, and I'm the only really, like, game I can reference that other people might have seen is Team Covenant's coverage of the finals at Nationals at Gen Con, where in Matt Coles' light side deck, there were no twists of fate. And that was one of the things, like, you saw that, like, there was a couple edge battles where it was decided by the dark side having a twist of fate. And it could just, you know, and it's not viable, right? Obviously, because Matt won the tournament. But just that it can make a deck so much stronger having those twists and knowing when to play them properly.
Yeah, even just having one twist. Like, let's say you're running a Rebel deck, a speeder deck, and you don't even care about twists, right? You have Black Blast damage. You don't care about twists, really. But you don't want your opponent to be able to go willy-nilly on you. You play one Leia Pod, and you just quickly get out one card from the Leia Pod. And then now they know. He has Leia. He has twists. And just doing that makes it so much easier to win edge battles. In fact, in that scenario, if I only had the one twist, even if I had the twist in my hand, I would be tempted not to play it and hold it for a long time just so my opponent was always on edge. Do they have a twist?
Yeah. I mean, we've seen it work. I mean, it only works that one time. Right, so if you're playing in a meta with people, you get one game where you can see how it really affects your opponent, and then once they know, that's it. So, you know, it's one of those things that's it's a dangerous game to play with something at Worlds like that, because you only have the one, and so maybe you get through rounds 1 through 5, you know, not getting caught with it, and you make the cut, which isn't now we know isn't until the next morning. There's a good chance that somebody who played you may tell somebody who else made the cut, and now they know that you only have one twist. And it just gets it hard. Whenever there's like a trickery factor that you're relying on for the game, it makes it much harder in a very serious tournament environment to keep that trick a secret all the way through to the end if that's what you're planning on doing.
Yeah, I kind of wish they did what the Star Wars CCG currently does, which is they always do this. They go, Swiss, day one. Day two is the cut. You actually get to pick a new deck for day two.
Sure.
So that it's a fresh, like, there's only going to be 2 or 3 games, and you can do a cool trick, and you can also tech for opponents, right? Like, So you see the draw, and then you're like, okay, first round I'm playing this guy, but I also know my second round opponent is this guy. I know he likes to play these kind of decks. This guy likes to play these kind of decks. Do I tech for my first round opponent who I don't think is as skilled as my second round opponent? It just makes for a really interesting night before.
I would personally hate that.
Oh, really? Okay.
So maybe not in the future, right? Maybe card pool advances and like, but right now, I feel like I'm honing in on a world's deck. I do not have a second world's deck hidden in my sleeve anywhere.
That is a really good point. The card pool is not really diverse enough to be able to be like, well, this guy generally plays this kind of deck. It's like, yeah, because it's the good deck. Like,
right. It's the only deck that wins.
Right. He's playing the Sith deck because it has broken cards in it. That's why he's playing it, not because he, quote, plays Sith decks.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, that's a good point. But in general, I think that's a really good point that you need to be aware that with the perfect information element of this game, going into that top 16, if you make it, your opponents are going to know what you're playing. Like, it's just how it's going
to
work.
They might. I would like to think that I'm not going to go... there's a big difference. And this is a big if, and I don't have any confidence in this fact. But if I were to make the top 16 for Star Wars, I would not be trying to hunt down and figure out what my opponent had, right? If something happened where I had, somebody from, SoCal had come along, had played that person, and we were out to dinner that night, and the game came up in conversation, I wouldn't not take the information. I think that's like a murky gray area.
Right, and that's the problem, right? Like, people are going to be talking, and even if you were adamant, like, I do not want to know anything, I'm going to be the best non-scouter ever, it's still even hard. Because you're just like, your friends are talking, and they're like, yeah, I was playing this game, my opponent did this, and you're like, oh, this sounds like a cool game. And they're telling you, about what happened to them, right? And then they're like, oh, and by the way, I was playing this guy, and you're like, oh, what? I play him in the second round. Now I know his whole deck, and I didn't even realize that's who you're talking about, and now I feel bad. And it's just know everyone's going to know your deck. Like, it's not going to be intentional, it's not going to be malicious. Some people it will be, but most of the people, it's just going to happen because people are friends at these events. Everyone's going to be hanging out talking. There's only going to be a handful of people that are like, I made top 16, time to go into the bunker. Time to go in lockdown. Time to plan all night. Most people are going to go out, have a good time, and talk to other people in the field.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to be a lot of time between the start. The tournament will last a pretty significant amount of the evening. You have to be back at 8:30 if you make the cut, so I don't see myself going out and partying if I made the cut on the Thursday night. But I have every intention... Right. If I don't make the cut, so let me rephrase it. If I don't make the cut, I'm going to be out partying because I don't have anything planned for the Friday.
Yeah. Same here.
If I do make the cut and I play to some degree through the cut at whatever point, as soon as the game is done, I have nothing to do for the rest of the day. I'm going to be partying. It's going to be I can't wait. That's one of the things I'm really excited for is can't wait to meet a lot of the people who have, who are not anywhere near us, who we've never met before, who will have an opportunity to get to know and talk about things not just Star Wars.
I want to use this as a moment to advertise this. We're planning on having some sort of Smuggler's Den event. It might be more formal. It might be more informal where we just get on our Facebook page and say, hey, Ben and I are at this bar or at this place. If you want to come hang out with the Smuggler's Den, come on over. But we do plan to do something fun at Worlds.
Yeah, it might not be the Friday night, because Tiny is taking very seriously the Star Wars 2v2 tournament. Game of Thrones Joust.
I would love to play the Star Wars 2v2. I would probably take that even more seriously.
Yeah.
I'd be like, Ben, you are not going out Friday night. We are going to stay up all night honing our teamwork and camaraderie. But unfortunately, it overlaps.
Our silent signals, tapping the table subtly to indicate how many Force icons you have.
If I wink three times, that means I have one icon. If I wink once, it means I have three.
Yeah.
Right, exactly.
All right.
Well, one more thing with Twist. One of the moves I've been doing lately, and this is a dangerous move. It's kind of a math move. It's looking at your opponent's deck with your perfect information and figuring out they have four twists. It's a kind of an absurd number. They've only seen one. They've seen a quarter of their deck, more than the quarter of their deck maybe. And they're entering into a battle where I have more cards than they have, and they need to win this edge battle. I start thinking to myself, they have to play a twist. Like, if they don't play a twist, they don't win this edge battle. And the math says that they're playing a twist. And so then I start thinking more to myself, can I guess that they have a twist? And this is where it becomes really hard. It's a little bit easier when you're over the board, especially if someone's a little nervous. You might be able to get some information out of them. But there is this guessing game, and it can be a little dangerous, where I've done it, where I've just been like, they play a card, and I have four in my hand, and one is a one or a zero, and I'll put that in, and they play a second card, and I pass, because the situation seems to tell me this is absolutely ripe for a twist. And then they twist, and then they look at me, and they say, how'd you know? Do I have a tell? You know, and depending on who it is, sometimes I'll say yes, sometimes I'll say no, whether or not they have a tell. Because if they don't and you tell somebody that and you're right every time, they freak out.
You know what the reverse side of that is?
What's that?
Is if they don't have a twist.
Yes, exactly. And this is something you can do. If you realize someone is doing that to you, you can start entering a battle where it looks like they can't win unless they have a twist. And then you don't twist. And you just play like the one big thing, and you assume that they're going to play nothing, and then you just say, okay, cool, thank you. So it can work either way, but the point is, it's something to be on the lookout for, both doing the guessing and guessing that they're guessing. Essentially, Twist of Fate makes edge battles really complicated, really interesting, and you should probably try to shoehorn one into your deck if you can. If you can't, and your deck just is amazing without them, I'm not telling you, you can't win without a twist. I'm not saying that. What I am saying is having even one makes it infinitely easier to win edge battles.
Sure. I was going to point out there's one thing that I've been noticing a lot is especially in that situation where, like, I know my opponent has to have a twist sooner or later, is people playing their first card as a one edge, especially so if they're the first person, first player attacking – they play their first card, even if they're planning on twisting, they play their first card with their lowest edge icons that they have in their hand. So that way, if your opponent's like, well, that's got to be a twist, I'm going to totally get them to play a twist without having even to play a card, and they say pass, you've won that edge battle without losing the twist. Yeah. Or then if they then do play something, you put the twist in, you now have two cards in there, which is going to make them want to play two cards, and you've now twisted away two of their cards and only lost one of your edge icons.
Right. Yep. Another quick thing about twists.
Not that I did it every time, people who I play
yeah,
in Worlds.
Yeah, Ben will. He has no variety to his game.
100% by the books every time. I've come up with a whole sleeve of rules.
Yep. Oh my God, if anyone finds your rule sheet of how to play edge battles, you're in so much trouble.
I definitely don't just wing it like 100% of the time.
One other thing is if somebody goes into a battle and it doesn't matter, right? It's just a battle that doesn't matter, and they drop a card in, and you have a twist in your hand, and you don't care if you win it. It's often a good idea to twist that because there's a good chance it's an opportunity, a battle of Hoth, and you need to kind of look at their board. Like, did they play a lot of cards? If they didn't, and they have all these empty resources, then maybe they're just dumping their hand. But if they played a bunch of good stuff, and they don't have resources available, there's a good chance what they're doing is try to slide in a target or two. I've had one person who was going in, and I was like, I don't quite understand why they're attacking. They put in a card, and I said, I bet that's a target, but it doesn't matter that much, so I'll still pass. They put in a second one, and then I twisted it, and they were like, and they gave me a quizzical look, and then we flipped them over, and it was two targets, and they were like, no, oh, my whole plan. You're like, yeah, well, you kind of telegraphed that by putting in two cards into a battle that didn't mean anything.
Yep.
So be aware of that. Be ready to twist that.
So many things. There are so many things.
All right. So another piece of advice I can give you is if you already have a really good board presence, you don't have to play more cards. You might be able to. Like for instance, you have the Executor out and you're playing a Sith deck and you think, like, I could put out this cruddy unit and he's not doing much for an edge battle anyway. I'll still have two cards in my hand for the edge battle. I could have four if I keep these two cruddy units, or I could play these two cruddy units to the board. They could block. They could be Executor fodder. I already have nine units on the table, so I don't need to. Sometimes it's a good idea just to keep them in your hand, because if nothing else, if your opponent looks at your hand and sees four cards in it, they're worried. If they look at your hand, they see two in it, they're probably thinking, I could probably win this edge battle. I think I'm going to go for it.
I do that all the time. I mean, it's a very common thing, I think, in a lot of card games, especially FFG's card games, to ask your opponent how many cards they have in their hand. It's one of those bits of knowledge that are really important. And I always start my turn before I deploy, how many cards do you have in your hand? And if they say five, I go to myself, oh, geez, there's no way. Like, I need to put units into play here, right? Like, right. I need to. I'm going to be in trouble. And so I do that all the time when I have the advantage on the board when I'm playing as well, where I will, like, I have the ability to put out multiple cards. And I'll just put out one. Yep. And it could be all, and I've had this happen where I'm playing a deck, I put out one unit, and that unit is the only unit that I, or the only card that I have in my hand that has more than one edge icon. And I keep it a handful of ones.
Right.
And I say, no, because I don't care. One, I'm either going to play all of these cards from my hand because I don't need them that desperately that it changes my board state. Or, you know, I've completely intimidated my opponent now because they're going to think, oh my God, he's got five cards in his hand. You know, at the very least, that's five icons collectively that might win an edge battle. And if not, it's one of those ones where you can play lots of games. Like, maybe they need to do multiple attacks against you. And you can play one card an edge turn, and they're playing multiples because they want to win. So by the time they get to their third one, they have no cards left in their hand, and you still do because you have five. I mean, that's a huge, you know, swing right there. That last edge battle may matter, and now you have the card and they don't, and you win.
Yep, I totally agree. I think that's something you do a little bit better than me, that I've actually learned from you.
Boom, look at that.
Of our talks, like, you know, because it's really difficult to find the moment, right? Like, I understand the principle, and I always have, but I had a little more aggressively played the board because there is no valor. There's no board wipe. People are not playing the two board wipes. And so if they're not playing them, there's no real downside to just flooding the board with dudes, except that now you're not winning edge battles.
Yeah.
All right. Another sort of complicated one, and this is something you can both bluff at and use to your advantage, is if your opponent plays some stuff, and they have resources left, and they have a couple cards in their hand, especially, let's say, there are rebels, right? And they're attacking you, and they have three cards left in hand, and they have two resources open, one of them a rebel. I will often think to myself, probably that person actually only has two cards in their hand, because that third one is a rebel assault, and it's not going in. So they actually only have two cards in their hand, and I will play the edge battle like that. The same would hold true as if, like, they play a Falcon, they bounce it back to their hand, they have three cards in their hand. No, they really only have two unless they're maxed out on the resources where they can't play that Falcon for two turns or something. They're just not going to drop that Falcon in unless it's like a game-ending scenario. And if they do, all the better, right? You just took the Falcon out of their hand. So I sort of treat that edge battle as if they have less cards in their hand than they really do.
Yeah, I mean, it's like that for a lot of the big power cards, right? Where if you know, you know, from an example before, where you put in three edge icons on defense with one card that you've passed, right? And they're now like, oh my God, it's a twist. If it happens to be the situation where it's, they're not that concerned because they played a Palpatine or Vader, which beats that three, like, yeah, I'm upset. Like, maybe if it was a game-winning edge battle, like, oh my God, now that I've lost the game. But it, a bunch of times, I'm more to myself, I'm thinking, that's great. No, right. That's one less Vader, right? Like, if he hasn't seen Vader yet, and he's not on the board, and he just edged him. This is great for me because there's now less of a chance of him drawing it in his next hand.
Yep. And you can also bluff at that. Like, you can leave two open because your hand is garbage, and you specifically leave them open in such a way as to bluff a card. Like, you're bluffing a Force Lightning, or you're bluffing a Rebel Assault, which
or
each,
a Bamboozle,
by the way,
or whatever.
Right, and each of the cards I mentioned only have one icon. So your opponent is factoring that in. They're like, okay, they have two cards for real in their hand, and then even if they get desperate, they only have that one more icon. It's not that great. But in fact, that's not what you have. Instead, you have, like, target, Battle of Hoth, and they're just like, whoa, what happened? Like, this was not at all what I expected.
And you'd be like, yeah, that's right, you didn't expect it. And you get up and you do a little dance, and you're like, what? Didn't expect it, what?
I usually don't do the little dance, but I could see you doing that. Yeah, I hope you do some dances at Worlds.
Oh, man. I will try not to do it during events, because I do not like to be a bad sport. I mean, it's already going to be a situation where if I'm winning, I'll be smiling like an idiot. And if I'm losing, I'll be very sad. And I try my best to mitigate that as it is, to try and not look like I'm gloating. So I don't think doing a victory dance after wins will happen, but I'll definitely dance at some point.
Thankfully, I'm a very good sport, both at winning and losing, and that won't be an issue.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to call me out on that?
I mean, whatever. I mean, everybody will know very shortly that that's not true.
Yeah, I was recently told by somebody in a different card game that you are both the worst winner and the worst loser I've ever played a card game with. So it was an eye-opening moment for me. I have tried now to be better at both. So we'll
I mean,
see.
Your favorite thing to do when you're losing is to be like, well, it doesn't really matter because you just got lucky. in all the games, it's like, yeah, well, this is always going to – like you already had this game wrapped up from turn one, so it's not really that important. Completely and totally, like, remove the person from the equation. It's like, it's not because you're a good player. It's because you got very lucky. Like, don't worry about it.
I would have to disagree to an extent. I would not fully disagree with that statement. I would say that is an exaggerated statement on your part. But yes, to some degree. And I think it comes from playing competitive chess, right? Like, it's really frustrating for me when I don't draw anything and my opponent does. Because in competitive chess, that doesn't happen. It's not like there's a game where your opponent's like, boom, you forgot to take your queen out of your bag. Now you're in trouble. So it's just something I'm still getting used to. So I think the last big thing I want to talk about, and this is really difficult and a more advanced topic, is if your opponent plays out their hand and keeps a card back, or even two cards, and there's just a card they're not putting in edge battles, and they're not playing, and let's say they're the Sith, and they only have four resources, you can often think to yourself, it's probably a Vader or a Palpatine, and you kind of watch as they move it around in their hand, and they're never playing it, and you can almost take that out of the equation unless it's an edge battle that's absolutely critical. They're probably not going to edge their Palpatine in to stop you from getting one extra blast damage, right? They're just not going to do that. It's only going to be in a situation where it's like three blast or something's going to live or die. But this is something that is a little bit more advanced and really means that you have to concentrate very hard always on the game, because they're going to be moving that card around in their hand, and you have to be tracking that to see if they have indeed played it. Because maybe it's not a Vader or Palpatine, it's just another good card that they've been saving. And if you lose track of where they were moving it around, if they still now only have one, it might not be that same one, and it could be misinformation that becomes a mistake that you try to use as real information. So my question for you, Ben, is do you do that at all?
Try and keep track of somebody else's cards in hand?
Yeah, especially if they seem to have one that they're not playing, or they consistently have one. Do you pick up on that and then start trying to pay attention to that card?
Yes and no. I don't think I'm very good at it. I mean, I will notice if the turn has come all the way around and we've had a bunch of edge battles and they've kept that one card. I will notice that. I don't necessarily know that I would be able to. I would put any stock into it, any being one particular card, even in like common competitive decks.
Right.
You know, maybe it is the executor. Or maybe I'm completely wrong. Maybe it's just a force lightning they're holding. Like, yes, in general, you have an idea that it's probably one of the power cards in their deck. But, I mean, there are so many power cards in decks that it's almost, like, which one could it be? Is it the Falcon? Is it Han? Is it, you know? So, yes and no. Yes, I do. No, I'm really bad at it.
Yeah, and I would agree with it. Like I said, it's a pretty advanced, difficult thing to be able to do. It involves a lot of factors. You really have to know every card in their deck. You have to know that they're a good player. Like, they might just not be good at the game, and then you're like making these assumptions, and you're like, oh, wow, that assumption was totally inaccurate because you didn't have a good grasp on the game. So it does involve a lot of levels of play and assumptions, but it's just something that you should have in the back of your mind, at least. Maybe it's not something that you're consciously doing, but if you do notice, like Ben said, like after a couple edge battles, they keep having a card in their hand, maybe start paying attention. Is it the same card? Are they resource screwed right now? They are. Maybe it's a Palpatine. It's just something that might be able to help you.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, so that's our take on edge battles. Like
for
Ben
October
said,
2013.
Like Ben said, a lot of this information we've already covered, but with Worlds right around the corner, we thought it'd be good to kind of open this topic back up, both our suggestions, and then feel free to add your own. I'm sure we've missed a couple of thousand things because edge battles are so complicated and so critical to the game. And frankly, one of the reasons why I love this game so much. All right, Ben, what's your card of the week?
So my card of the week this week is one that was kind of an MBB player over the last 2 weeks, not just this past week, but the week before when we had a small elimination tournament as part of our monthly to bi-monthly league stuff that we do. And that card is Rogue 2. I really like that he's 2 costs, so he's not as expensive as Rogue 3, and makes it almost very easy to play along with something else on that same turn. I like that it gets triggered by attack pattern Delta. I like that it's one of the few speeders that has 2 black unit damage. It's one of the things I feel like really lacks a little bit in the speeder deck. I mean, yes, sometimes when you have a super hyper Rogue 3, you can have a lot of unit damage coming from that way. But to have that unit damage and know that, like, there's a good chance that it might survive the battle and then still get the strike because it's got black unit damage, it's been really clutch in a lot of conflict phases for me. Sometimes leaving it back as a defender, knowing that it can take out guys on offense to make sure that I get the unopposed. It's been really clutch as a good, solid speeder card.
Yeah, I agree. And especially if you get a bunch of speeders out, suddenly it just becomes this insane card that just blows up objectives by itself. Like, if you go that plus 2 of those tactic speeders with Hoth operations out, you're going to win the edge battle. You're going to blow that up. You're going to tactics a couple guys out. Like, there's not much they can do. Even if they're like, well, should I bother blocking? Because Rogue 2 has the gun icons. He's going to blow up whatever I block with. It's a really, really strong card.
Yeah, it is. It is really strong. I really like it.
So I'm torn this week between a couple cards, and I think I'm going to go with one that you're probably going to laugh at.
I hope I get to laugh at. I don't get to do this very often.
Let the Wookiee win.
I think you've used that one before.
Well, I'm going to use it again.
What? Come on. That's so uneventful.
The reason is because I have not been playing Chewbacca lately. Like, we just kind of decided Han, Chewie, and Falcon was not consistent enough, and for weeks of playtesting, we've been trying every variant of the Jedi deck. Do we put back in Yoda? Do we put in Redemption? Do we put in Obi-Wan so that we can get Jedi mind tricks for that darn first turn Palpatine that's so annoying with the holocron? What do we do? And Chewie just kind of got relegated to the side. He doesn't have resources in his pod. And so we had this little mini tournament. And I was like, you know what? We haven't tested this in a while. I'm just going to break out the standard Han, Chewie, Falcon deck. And holy cow, was Let the Wookiee Win just ridiculous. I mean, I won, I think, 2 games alone with Let the Wookiee Win. in one game on turn two against a Navy deck that had a lot of guys out. I essentially wiped his board with pretty much just let the Wookiee win, and then just went on to steamroll. It's just such a powerful card if you have Chewbacca out there. They attack with somebody, you let the Wookiee win, you kill their resource Chud, you hit Chewbacca, and then you kill the guy who's attacking. It's just absolutely phenomenal. Giving the light side essentially a force choke that's even better than a force choke and turns on your Wookiee guys. It's just a really, really good card that it's hard for me now that I've started playing again to build a deck without it. It's just that good.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those cards that, like, you know, we see now we have the ability to play with up to four Swindles in a deck. And Swindle's a really good card and it's very strong. I feel like Let the Wookiee Win is one of those cards that may or may not be viable to, like, make another objective set that has a copy of it in there. Because if you had four in your deck,
it would
almost be like if you had were allowed to have four Force Chokes in your Dark Side deck.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Wouldn't that be broken?
Yeah, that seems like really over the curve.
You know what you know is going to happen? You just know it. They're going to be like, the Dark Side, here's another pod with Force Choke. It doesn't fit that well in with Vader, but we're going to put it in anyway. And then you're going to be like, what are you talking about? It fits perfectly with Vader.
Now there's another Force Choke now. I have six of them.
Yeah. Like, I would run a deck with five pods with Force Chokes and just be like, here are my 10 objectives. I have 10 Force Chokes and Vader. And I pretty much win the game. So, yeah, Let the Wookiee Win, light side's equivalent of Force Choke, and absolutely amazing. Can't believe I stopped using it. I want to slap myself.
Should we do a pod quiz, Tiny?
Yeah, let's do that. It's been a little while. I feel like with Worlds coming up,
it's probably important
to know everything. Yeah. Let's do this.
So this is what I think we should do.
Tell me.
I think we should change the format a little bit, and people can say that we're chickening out on this one. But particularly, yeah, you never need to know what the number is, right? Like, if I give you a number, that number can become pretty much at this point now, any number between 1 and 80. It's pretty hard to remember that. If I give you a card name, would you be able to name the rest of the cards in that set in that objective set? Because I feel like that's how I tend to remember cards. It's
right.
Like, oh.
I would like to say with supreme confidence, yes. But there are certain pods that if you do that, I would have to say probably not. But let's give it a try.
This is how the brain works. Sometimes it's more visual.
Yep. It's almost like a mnemonic device. You know, a little piece of the puzzle, and then you can fill it out.
Sure. All right. I'm looking for a good one here.
I'm looking for a good one for you, too, because you know what? We're both going to do one.
Yeah, that's fine. I could be a total, like, a-hole right here and be like, target of opportunity.
See, and that's a good point. That's where you need to memorize the pods like that where they're in. And so then you would say, what number is it? And now it becomes, well, I know it's one of four. It's that number. Okay, it is this pod. So you do actually need to know the numbers for some things, but you're right, generally speaking.
Sure. Okay, so here's my one for you. Traitorous Wingard from the Scum and Villainy set. So it's a green, just so you know, it's a green card. If that's
all right. Traitorous Wingard is you said from Scum and Villainy?
Yeah, Scum and Villainy.
Okay. So he is the guy who is Bossk's helper. So that Traitorous Wingard, just to be clear, I see the card, so I know what it says. It's the guy that basically says, screw Wookiees, right?
No. That's the Transgoshan Hunter.
Yes. I thought you said it was Scum and Villainy. Did you mean it was from the box?
I mean, it's a Scum and Villainy. It's a Scum and Villainy card.
It is.
Traitorous Wingard. That's what I was telling you. So it's Traitorous Wingard. It's a green card from Scum and Villainy. It has the text, this unit gains a black blast while an objective has at least one captured card.
This sounds like a pod we don't play.
Yep, it is.
Traitorous Wingard. I don't know if I'm going to know this one. I'm trying to think of...
It has one of the big cards in the Scum and Villainy.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was going to guess, but I wasn't sure. I was going to guess it's from Nar Shada because it's one we don't play that much.
Nope.
No. God dang it. All right, let me think here. It's not Greedo's pod.
It isn't.
It is not Lucrative Contracts, which is not in the box.
Sure.
It is not Jabba's pod.
It is not.
It's not the Narshada. It is not the Pit.
You've pretty much named all the ones that it's not.
Exactly. I've named everyone I've ever played. I've never actually played this pod or seen it played.
And sure, so you've definitely seen it played.
It's becoming very difficult. What is Traitor's Wingard's stats again?
It's a 1-1 with one blast unit damage, one unit damage, black unit damage.
I don't know. Give me another card in the pod, because I don't know.
All right. Well, there are a bunch of cards that won't help you. There's a prized possession.
Yep.
And a target of opportunity. Okay. And so now there's two cards left. One of them is Tractor Beam.
Tractor? Is it that one? No, that one's not even. I don't know. Let's just wait. Is the Wingard a ship or a dude?
It's a dude.
Wow, I don't know. What is it?
Slave One.
Oh my god. Oh my god, that's funny. Wow, that's really bad.
I love that you got literally every other scum objective set that there is. You're like, I know all of these. I don't know this last one.
Wow. So, note to SoCal meta. Someone needs to start playing Slave One, because apparently no one in our meta plays it, and someone at Worlds is going to play it, and we're going to be like, Slave One, that's the most overcosted card ever right now.
Right.
All right. Well,
that it also has three. It also has three Foresight cards.
Yeah, no, Slave One's real good. All right, let me find something for you.
Damn it.
People don't play.
What? Brian plays it. I would have known it, I think.
Yeah, that's. I mean, it's not like it was a crazy one. Like, I'm really embarrassed that I couldn't get it.
Right. I mean, I could have picked the one that had, like, the assassin droid in it.
That one would have been easier. That would have, oh, yeah. And I would have known that's Narshada. All right. Here's one. The card is Short Range Hauler.
So this is the Ord Mandel smugglers and spies objective.
That it is.
Yep. So it has covert sniper in it.
You're so lucky Neil played this lately recently.
No, it's fine. I knew what it was. That card is the one card. The short range hauler is the one card I don't play this objective set. Okay. It has over my dead body in it.
Yep.
It has, I don't know the name of this card, but it's the 2/2 unit that has the same ability as Renegade Squadron, helping you uncapture cards, and it allows you to draw a card.
The Mission Commander?
Yeah, is that what it's called?
Yeah, how many Force icons does that have?
She has one.
She has two.
Damn.
I had to undermine your amazingness somehow.
Yeah, that's fine. I understand. You gotta try and one-up me some way. So far, I've won this episode quite handily.
Oh, yeah, like, it looks like I've never even played the game. So, yeah. So apparently at Worlds, I'll go. Oh, no, I have a bye, so I'll win that one.
You get to win the bye, despite it being a tough opponent. You'll win the bye.
Okay, then I'll lose the next four.
I think the last card is an event card.
You sure it's not a fate card?
No, I'm not sure it's not a fate card, but I think it's an event card. I think it's don't get cocky or something like that.
It's one type, but it's not go get cocky. It's similar though.
It's not the one that gives you, if you win an edge by two or more, it gives you extra unit damage?
It does. It's if you win an edge battle at all, you get unit damage. All
right. What's the name of that one?
Is if you win by two or more, you get blast damage.
Sure. And so what's the name of that card?
Oh, it's called Bring 'Em On.
Okay. Of course.
And how many force icons does that card have?
That one only has one.
That one has two.
I meant to. Did I say one?
Yeah, you meant it only has two, because it's so bad for that. Covert Sniper, how many icons does that have?
That only has one.
Yep. And how about the short range hauler?
That only has one.
And how about over my dead body?
That has two?
That also has one.
Damn. So that's what I have.
Yeah, though, I mean, you're pretty close on a pod that we never, ever play, even knowing the icons on it. So that's not so bad.
Yeah, yeah. That's just how I roll.
There you go. So in the world of perfect information, apparently Ben is more perfect than Tiny.
Yes. Oh, God, I'm going to take that clip and I'm going to edit it and just have that as, like, anytime you call me, Ben is more perfect than Tiny. Like, that's what that's what your ringtone will be for now.
Oh, Ben. I guess I have to edit that out of the podcast. All right, guys. Thanks so much for listening again. We'll definitely squeeze one more in before Worlds, maybe two more.
Yeah.
Definitely have to have a Worlds prep episode.
Exactly. That's what it'll at least be the Worlds. Like, what do you need to bring with you to Worlds? Like, do you need to bring all of your cards?
Probably.
I feel like that's the worst advice ever. To bring all your cards. Yeah. Because I think exactly what will happen, and this is why we'll probably have to have a discussion about it, will be what happened to the top-tier gaming guys, where they probably brought all their cards to Gen Con, and because of that, they made what change to the deck they were 100% confident in, because they convinced themselves that they needed to make a change, and it totally boned them.
Yep, they pulled out.
So if you don't have your cards, you can't do that.
But what if
you have an illegal
deck?
Yeah, but you would check that before you don't leave home with an illegal deck.
Okay, so that's step one of our advice for the next podcast. Don't leave home with an illegal deck.
Yeah. Consider not bringing your cards so that you're not tempted to adjust your... Anyway, this is for another episode.
That is. All right, well, guys, well, until next time.
There's one more thing for anybody who is still listening. Mm-hmm. Because I think a lot of people stopped listening by this point, and we could probably say whatever you wanted here. Mm-hmm. Tiny and I are both looking for Hearthstone beta keys.
Oh, we are.
And if you happen to be one of our fans, maybe an adoring fan, maybe not adoring, maybe the wrong word, tolerant fan, and you happen to have a spare one that you've just been like, I'm not sure who to give this to, I don't know anybody who wants to play, we both want to play.
Yeah.
Don't just send it to the email at, you know, the Smuggler's Den podcast email, because Tiny will get it, and we all know that ideally you want me to have it over Tiny. So if you have it, email or post it to Facebook. Tiny doesn't even check the Facebook one. I will send you my personal email, and I will be always in your debt for giving me a Hearthstone beta key.
Now, if you were to send it to me, I would not only be in your debt, but amazing things would happen.
Wow.
I don't know what they are.
Amazing. You're so, like...
The universe would reward you in some way. All right, Ben, I think we should get out of here.
Yeah, this went a lot longer. We said this was going to be a 45-minute episode. It's now an hour and 20 minutes.
Yeah, that's what happened there. All right, guys. Till next week.
May the force be with you.